Welcome to Embracing Continuous Behaviour Change for Anger Management, the podcast that helps you to calm your emotions and communicate effectively. I'm your host, Claire Broadley, the Anger Management Coach. In this podcast, I'll bring you expert interviews, inspiring stories, and practical advice on calming your emotions and living a more peaceful and fulfilling life. So sit back, relax, and get ready to master your emotions. Okay, so good afternoon, everyone. I'm Claire Broadley, and I am thrilled to be joined today by another amazing guest. Today we have Advita Patel joining us. Advita, thank you so very much for agreeing to come along and speak to everyone today.
Oh, no, thank you for the invite, Claire. Thank you so much.
So the reason that how I came across you was on LinkedIn. And it was one Saturday afternoon and I was scrolling through doing doom scroll, as we all tend to do. And in fact, I've forgotten. Advita, please, can you introduce yourself? Give us a little bit of your bio.
Yeah, of course I can. So I live in Manchester. I've always lived in Manchester. It's one of my favourite cities. Biased there, definitely. I own a few businesses. So my main business is Comms Rebel, which is an internal communication and a workplace culture consultancy. So I work with organizations to help them communicate better so their colleagues can thrive. So that's my Comms Rebel. I'm also the co-founder of a global consultancy called A Leader Like Me. And A Leader Like Me works with global organizations to help them build inclusive cultures in the workplaces, right, especially those who are multicultural perspectives and people from different backgrounds, diverse backgrounds specifically. I'm also a certified coach. So I own a coaching membership where we work with colleagues and other participants in helping them build clarity in their lives and lead their life with purpose. And just recently, which we'll talk about more, I'm sure, yeah, is the Asian Communications Network, which is a network aimed at Asian communication, PR, marketing, and journalist professionals who are looking for a safe space to talk about some of the challenges that they may face in their everyday jobs, but also in terms of how do we build more allyship in our industries that we support so we can keep on thriving and elevating our skills.
Wow, so you're one busy lady. I mean, do you get any time for you in there?
I know. I mean, you know what? What's really what I always say to folks, because there is a lot happening, but I'm very grateful for the team that I have around me. I have an incredible team of people who support and work with me. I also am very conscious about priorities and protecting my energy and my well-being. So I prioritize the things that are important to me. And you'll be surprised, and the listeners who are kind of thinking, God, that's a lot of stuff you're kind of doing. But you'll be surprised on when you start redirecting your priorities onto things that are a little bit more purpose-led, how much time you actually do gain back. Because we do spend a lot of energy on things that probably create rage and take on a bit of an emotional strain that takes up a lot of our time.
Which leads me nicely back on to me saying that I was doom scrolling and doing that thing that takes up time. So I saw you on LinkedIn and you had posted, it was a post that really hit home for me. I saw it and you started it off talking about your 7-year-old self.
Yeah.
And I think it started that your mum perhaps had found you in the bathroom scrubbing your skin.
Yeah.
And she asked what you were doing and you said, I'm trying to get rid of the dirt.
Yeah.
And that some children at school had said that you were dirty. And your post then went on to say other things that had happened for you and your family throughout your time growing up.
Yeah.
Would you, and it honestly hit home so hard for me, would you very kindly tell our listeners what happened to you and your family as you were growing up, as you did in that post?
Yeah, of course. So I grew up in a very racist part of Manchester, I would say. There wasn't any families of colour or any different ethnicities that lived in the town that we lived in. And we moved there from Bolton, where I was born, and we moved to Manchester in this town when I was 10. And on the first day, so prior to all of that, and that story about being in the bathroom and scrubbing my skin and all that kind of stuff, that was when I was 7 and before we moved. But I went to a school in Manchester. Mm. And one of the girls, or two of the girls actually, that I used to play with said to me that they won't play with me until I was clean. So I went into the bathroom that day and I used a scouring pad and I was scrubbing my skin because I, as a 7-year-old, you don't really know the difference. Yeah. That you are compared to your, you know, your friends and stuff. And that, I suppose that was my first memory of being seen as different. So when we were, and then my mum tried to, I can't remember the full conversation, but I asked my mum the story before. And, you know, she said that she did go to school. And I said in the post that the headmaster said,
the kids.
And we never really got that support or allyship from the school at all. Yeah. So that was my first experience of being different and being different. Dominant culture around me. And then when we were 10, we moved to this town. And on the first day, we were the first night and the next morning, I was getting ready to go to my new school. And my mum was outside scrubbing graffiti off the window, which basically had told us to go back home in a very derogatory manner. So, and I could just see the outline of the graffiti. And I said to my mum, like, oh, what's going on? What's that? And she said, oh, nothing. It's just, I'm just cleaning the dirt off the window. And then that, from that moment on, I suppose, is a series of various events throughout the 14, 15 years we lived there. And majority of the time, it was just my sister and me. Because my mum worked full time. They're out the house at 7 in the morning and they weren't home till 9 at night, Monday to Sunday, 365 days a year. So it was just us two, mostly on our own, having to manage fireworks put through the letterbox, you know. House being set on fire, windows being smashed in, our cars being scratched to pieces, people spitting at us, you know, mice put through the letterbox. Like, it was a continuous cycle of hell for a very long time, which led us to be very withdrawn in my teenage years, you know, in terms of keeping my head down, not really making scene, because you don't want to, right? Because you're like, if I keep my head down and I don't say anything, then people won't notice me and I can just get on with my life and not really be noticed. And that's how we, both of us, actually kind of lived our life for a long time. And it could take a lot out of you, Claire, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I can imagine. And you said there, when you were describing what were happening, fireworks, and then you just straight away said house being set on fire, bricks being put through the window, almost like that's kind of a non-event.
Yeah, because it was normal for us. That was our normal life.
Wow.
It was normal. We had a panic alarm fitted in by the police because it got to that extreme that anytime we pressed the red button, and we thought we'd never have to use it. I mean, we used it a lot of times because it was intense and it became the norm. When you're at 10 years old and up until you're like 20, you know, I changed. So I started to build more confidence when I went to a college in Oldham, which is a very diverse part of the UK, as you know. And I started to make friends with people who were like me, which gave me a little bit more confidence to stick up for myself. So things started to change more when I was 16, 17, where I started to find my identity a little bit. But even then, you know, what I realized at that age is that I want to belong and I want to be part of, I want to be friends with everyone, right? And I want people to like me. I don't want people to not like me. So I adjusted my personality a lot to become white, basically. So I didn't like to wear my Indian clothes. I rejected the culture 100%. I only spoke about Christmas and Easter. I kind of changed, and that kind of carried me through the first 10 years or 8 years of my early career.
Because that's like losing your identity, isn't it?
I lost it because, you know, you become a chronic people pleaser, right? Because you're told from such a young age, you don't belong here.
Yeah.
You're not welcome here. and you don't know, and you can't change anything about yourself, your skin colour. So the next stage then to change is your personality and your identity. Because if you can change your personality and identity, then maybe they'll like me and maybe they'll accept me. And then maybe I'll be one of them and I won't get abused or attacked or told to get off home. You know, go and live somewhere else kind of thing. And I was born, like I said, in Bolton. I don't know any other country.
Have as much right as anybody else.
I don't know any other country apart from this UK. So when people used to say to me, go home at such a young age, I'd just be like, what, back to Bolton? I moved to Manchester, I'm back to Bolton. But it does create, you know, the emotional resilience you need to manage behavior like that towards you. But I think people don't, when I talk to my friends about what I experienced, that post that I did on LinkedIn, Claire, I had so many DMs from so many people, from people who had experienced similar situation to me, from allies who were absolutely shocked that one had gone through something so horrific for such a long period of time, which can, you know, it can take you one of two ways, in my opinion. It can take you down the road of rage and absolute anger, which I did have that for a short period, or a road of I'm going to find who I am and make my life work for me and live on my terms, not on anyone else's terms.
So at what age did you realise that you were doing the people pleasing and that you were changing your identity to make other people happy rather than, because you couldn't get that happiness just by being you?
No.
Didn't please them.
No. It all happened actually when I was 28. So I'd been working in my role, like job. I'd been in the career now for about 8 years. 7 years actually, just after uni. So I got a job straight after uni, 7 years, and I worked as a communications professional. And I met an incredible woman called, I'll protect her identity actually, just in case, but I met an incredible woman. And I remember my my boss at the time. So we'd just been merged with another organization. And I remember my boss at the time saying that we're having a new team member joining our team. She's going to go off to a meeting with this person and then and she'll let me know what she's like and all that. So, okay, great. And then when my boss came back, she was like, oh, this woman is going to be hard work, like difficult, challenging. She's got a lot to say for herself. And I remember myself thinking, well, I really could do with someone who isn't like kicking up a storm because we're busy. And it's what harmonious life, work. Anyway, I ended up going to meet this person myself at another event that we had. And I heard her before I saw her, and she had this incredible laugh. Like, it filled the room with so much energy. And it was a black woman. And I was like, wow, in the 7 years I'd worked in comms at that point, I'd never met another person of colour working in comms.
Wow.
So I was just like, whoa. And she was like 15 years older than me. She was incredible. She had this gregarious laugh and energy about her. She was confident. She knew her so well. And I was like, whoa, this woman's amazing. And we became good friends. But I saw Claire, the behavior that she experienced from other people. Because I'd conformed and I was basically white, to be honest. And she really lent into her culture and she was really proud of her culture. People found her very uncomfortable. And I started to notice aggressions towards her. And I remember, and she'd just come back from breast cancer surgery and she'd gone through some treatment. So she'd been off work for a year. Yeah. So she'd come back. And even though she'd been off work for a year, she was still this gregarious individual who just had so much energy. But I remember sitting in a meeting once and she asked for a special chair to help her heal better. And it got approved and she left the room. And then the couple of directors in the room said, well, I hope this now means she'll do some proper work. And I remember going, oh, my God, like, what was a person in this organisation who's come back from such a severe illness has been treated in this way? And I remember going home and telling my mum about what I'd heard and what I'd experienced. And I didn't speak up in that room. I didn't know what to say. I wasn't sure. And selfishly, I think I just wanted to, like I said, I still had this kind of trauma and triggers I hadn't dealt with. So I had my head down. I was a very I was a model minority, Claire. That's what, you know, as there's a term out there for model minorities who just do as what they're told to do, keep the head down, don't cause a scene. And I remember going home and telling my mum was like, you know, as somebody of colour, we're going to have to work 150 times harder than everybody else to be taken seriously. I ended up leaving the organisation after 6 months for various different reasons. And I remember having a conversation with her and saying, like, how do you cope with this behaviour? Like, how are you managing? And she goes, do you know what? And she put some of the blame on her. She goes, I appreciate that I'm not who I used to be pre-diagnosis. It's taken me a long time to catch up and I may not be. And I was like, no, I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the behaviours that you're experiencing because you dare question somebody or you stick up for yourself, you know. And she goes, it's just part and parcel of who I am. I'm like, you know, basically implying that, she, you know, as a Black woman, this is what she's experiencing. And I never, you know, I never worked with anyone of colour. Like I said, Claire, I wasn't in a someone who had such a strong personality. So I left, and as you do, you lose touch. And then about 6 months after, I misdialed because we had the same person with the same name in my team. And I misdialed, and she ended up picking up. And I said, oh, my God, I'm so embarrassed I've not been staying in touch. How are things going? She goes, oh, you know, things aren't great. She said, I've relapsed. And that's why I was so distracted for the past few months. And she said, that's why I was put on performance review. I was put on performance review. She went, but you know what, Advita, I'm going to go back and I'm going to tell them, we'll show them exactly what I'm worth and all that. And I said, you know what, just focus on healing. Focus on yourself. Forget about them. They're not even worth your energy. And she was like, yeah. But I'm, you know, I'm going to go back and I'm going to show them and all that. And that was kind of like the last conversation we had, because a couple of weeks later, a mutual friend of ours messaged me and said that they'd passed away.
Oh, God.
And that was a huge shock for me. And that's the turning point in my life. Yeah. Because I remember sitting next to my boss and she said to me, oh, my God, like I was cold. And I said, should I be okay? I said, no, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
I said, I've just heard some tragic news. And the last conversation I had with them was all about how she felt worthless and how she's made to feel worthless. And I said, nobody on this planet should ever be felt, should be made to feel that way by any other human being ever. You know, we all deserve a space. We all deserve to thrive. We all deserve respect.
Yeah.
And she didn't have any of that in her last few months on this planet. And in that moment, Claire, I was like, no more, like absolutely no more. Like if I see any adversity, if I see people facing, you know, emotional abuse, bad behavior, banter, as some people class it, I'm going to speak up. I'm going to speak up and say, that's not right. You shouldn't be saying that. This is why it's not right. Like, that's unfair.
Yeah.
And I remember a couple of my friends saying to me that you could end up, you know, not progressing yourself because you're challenging. And I said, you know what? I don't care. Like I genuinely, I've got the privilege. Luckily, I've got a very supportive family. I've got the privilege that I know I'll have the support if I ever had to leave a workplace. But a lot of other people don't have that safety around them. And a lot of other people don't know how to navigate through that. And if I can do that, I'm going to do it. And that's when it all changed for me. Fantastic. And taking on everything that happened from childhood, to me changing my identity, to then accepting who I was, it took a good, you know, from that 28, 29 years old, it took another 8 years to heal myself, to get to a point where I could be who I needed to be to do the work that I wanted to do.
Yeah. And that honestly brought tears to my eyes when you were telling me that then. And you said it made you go cold, and it made me go cold when you said she'd passed away.
No.
It's just awful to think that anybody should be able to, as you say, make anybody feel not good enough or that they don't belong. Who are we to do that to anybody?
It's so unfair to even have. Like, I'm like, why? Like the whole, you know, gender, ethnicity, sexuality, all that, like all of that, the hatred that some people have for individuals. I'm like, why? Like, why do you hate people so much that you're willing to make them feel absolutely awful? So when they do tragically pass away or die, they feel so worthless. Does that make you feel good? Does
exactly,
that
mean
that you've made a human being feel less than? Like, what kind of personality and human being are you to make people feel that bad? And people will say, oh, I didn't realise and I wasn't aware. And that's fair. Like, you know, we all make mistakes, Claire. And we all can sometimes say something in the heat of the moment, or we don't have the education around it. So we may make, you know, slip up and say something. I've been there. But it's learning. It's like, you know, Maya Angelou says, when you know better, do better, right?
Absolutely.
And you can take that ownership.
Yeah. If we look at, and we spoke just before we started recording, and we said that I'd messaged you on the Saturday. You put the post on the Saturday. I messaged you. And then Southport, the awful murders of the young girls happened on the Tuesday, and then it all just kicked off with what they're calling protesting. I don't think it's protesting at all. I think it's rioting, but hey, whatever they want to call it. And you only need to look at the faces of some of those people in the crowds. Those aren't faces of people who are misunderstanding. Those aren't faces of people who are uneducated. Those are faces of people who have got absolute hatred in them.
Yeah.
And you just think, why? What on earth?
Yeah. And it's driven by, you know, it's driven by misinformation, and it's driven by disinformation, and it's driven by ignorance. People need to be educated on facts and reality of what's happening, rather than some nonsense MP or someone who believes they've got, you know, got a power telling them what they should be doing, and they're sitting in their mansion, you know, not being consequences of what's happening to these individuals, who many of them who have now been prosecuted regret their actions. Because of, and part of it's probably because they've been prosecuted, but part of it's also because they've actually sat back and gone, why?
Like, absolutely.
Why was I doing this? What's happening? And it's that pack mentality, right? Which is, again, rage and anger that people get immediately because something has happened that's really hit them core, but they can't process it. They don't know how to process the anger. So instead, they attack someone who is different from them, because you've got obviously people same as you, because they're one of you. So you go around looking in the street, you know, looking at people who are completely different from you and blaming them for all your troubles.
Yeah. So talking of that rage and that anger, and we started off when you were 7 years old and you didn't understand that the words and the hurtfulness that was coming your way. But as you grew older, you must have started to now see that actually I understand now how you're being. I understand that you are not wanting me to fit in, and you're the hatred, etc. How did you manage that turmoil that must have been going on inside of you? Was there anger? And if there was, what strategies did you put into place, or how did you keep you on that level playing field, or did you?
Well, in the first 8 years of my career, I conformed. I ignored subtle, well, wasn't even subtle in some cases, aggressions, microaggressions, macroaggressions. I made jokes about my own community and culture before anyone else could. I became a part of them. You know, so people used to say to me, when they used to say some hideous things about immigrants and refugees and asylum seekers, that, you know, we're not talking about you, we're talking about them. You're one of us. And I used to take pride in that, right? Oh yeah, I've worked so hard that I'm now where I am. And it makes me feel quite disappointed at myself, but I also recognize that it's a learning journey I was going through myself.
Yeah.
And then once I had that kind of moment of epiphany of when I saw someone else getting more hatred, let's be honest, and aggression, because they dared to be themselves. Everything changed for me, and that's when I started to become more curious about people's questioning. I used to hold people accountable about some of the questions that they asked or some of the decisions that they made. I went to places where I was celebrated rather than tolerated. You know, I worked on my self-esteem and my confidence a lot, And there's been moments, you know, up until like in 2018, I speak quite openly, I had another confidence crash, you know, in terms of who am I? Like, what have I done? Like, what's going on? Yeah. And that's led by someone else's decision to recruit somebody who didn't have to go through the process that they were making me go through at that time, you know, and that's when I saw the differences. Like, what's the difference between me and them? The only difference between me and them, apart from the fact that I was more experienced, was that I was a woman of colour. And their behaviour towards me about that opportunity was so different compared to the behaviour towards them. So they were very much about, you have to go through process. We can't just give you the opportunity. You have to earn your stripes. You have to demonstrate your worth. So we're going to have to pitch you against external candidates. So they, you know, so we're measuring good people against good people. I was like, absolutely. Like, I have worked so hard, blah, blah, blah. They then told me the job was gone. And they then handed it over, just handed it, by the way, to someone else. And a white woman at that, and who wasn't as qualified as me. And their excuse was that I was planning to leave the organization. And the reason I was planning to leave the organization is because there wasn't any opportunity for me to progress. So all of that pushed me. And again, that rage, I had so much rage and anger at that point, Claire.
Yeah, but
I worked so hard at proving my worth. And I was prided myself on my qualifications, my education. I volunteered for various different things. I did what was asked of me. I stuck up for myself. I felt, you know, I was very kind of, I felt I did the right things that was asked of me. And then that happened. And at that point, after I took me about 3 months, 4 months to get over the anger, because that was the first time I think everything came crashing down for me. In terms of all everything that I experienced during my childhood and my teenage years and then my early 20s and mid 20s and 30s, I was like, what the actual am I doing? And I had a huge confidence crash, like beyond anything I've ever, even everything I went through. That moment for me at the age of 37, I was lost. And it took a lot out of me. And that was a moment for me to kind of, like, and that's the first time I have to admit, I felt that fire, that rage that I think I just kind of kept simmering and managed through conversation and being curious. And I'm a certified coach. So I was like using my coaching techniques on myself. Yeah. But that moment I was like, I could have hit someone. I'm not even going to, like, I was so angry. And luckily for me, I had an incredible community around me and fantastic friends and family who just allowed me to speak out about my rage and didn't diminish my feelings, didn't try to make me feel less than for having these feelings, and just heard it out and not trying to fix it either. You know, not trying to kind of come up with a solution or fix it, and actually just say, yes, it's awful what you've been through. Absolutely awful. And I have no words. I have no solution for you
right
now.
It's just being heard, isn't it?
The power of someone listening to you is incredible. Yeah. And I won't forget those photographs that were being shown when the rioters were out there, when the imams from the mosque came out to have a conversation with them. And just listening to where they were coming from, which is such a respectful act, demonstrated actually when you have a conversation and you can talk to each other openly without fear, a lot of things can change.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly where we have to think about our emotional resilience and anger. Like, we need people around you to listen. You need people around you to have a conversation, ask you those questions about what can I do? Just talk if you need to talk. And help us move forward. And that anger lasted, you know, a good 3 to 4 months. And then I started to channel the negativity into something more positive. So all that fire I had, I redirected it into something purposeful. And that's when I decided at that point I was going to do my own business, and then went down that path. And I never really intended to ever work for myself. No, I saw the challenges my parents went through, and I just wanted a secure role and a job, you know, getting a monthly pay packet. That fire lit something in me And even though the initial few months was anger, the rest of the time was then channeled into doing something positive. And I have to, you know, I have to owe the people who made that decision at that time a lot, because if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be talking to you today. I wouldn't have written a best-selling book. I wouldn't have hosted, you know, podcasts myself. I wouldn't have been involved in speaking internationally. A lot has happened to me in the last 4 to 5 years when I decided that my anger needs to be re-channeled into something positive and I need to stop waiting for external validation.
It's almost like, and I'm picturing this explosion of this anger kind of exploding all of the walls that were holding you in and almost making you conform to what everybody else thought you should have been doing. And the anger just was like, boom, no, I'm coming out and you're going to have a bit of this. And I think that is an amazing thing, absolutely amazing, to go out there, own it, owning you and saying to everybody else behind you, right, come on, because we're doing this.
Yeah.
We're being us. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So tell us more about your business, is because you help people do exactly what you've just said that you did. You would give them that confidence and voice.
Yeah. So so the reason my business is called Comms Rebel is because I spent so much of my time not being a rebel and conforming to the rules and the strictness of what I believed was great leadership, right? So I didn't have any role models that look like me in senior leadership roles. We know there's challenges in board level having representation, and not only from a woman perspective, but also women of color and people of color generally. So I decided to call my business Comms Rebel, which did get a little bit of mixed reaction, you know, in terms of, wow, like you're a rebel, like can we work with rebels? And I'm about, you know, I always talk about positive disruption. And like my role as in Comms Rebel as a founder and CEO is to ask people to think differently about how they may approach certain challenges and around them and positively disrupt the workplace. So people like my friend don't ever have to experience what they experience and feel. And if the organization is not right for them, that is absolutely okay. You can still have a good conversation with somebody and help them thrive in different ways. You know, this whole inner kind of, oh, they're not good enough, they're not delivering. It's like, well, check in your own bias first and then, you know, and then make that decision. So my role in Comms Rebel is helping, like I said, helping organizations find their path around inclusivity. So what does inclusion look like for them? And not only for the marginalized and minorities, but for everybody. Like, how do we make sure that everybody belongs and feels included? Everyone takes accountability for the decisions and the choices that they make and the conversations that they have. And everyone holds each other accountable, right? For what they're doing. And that's been, and then because of my own confidence crash, and I was an executive coach before my confidence crash, I transitioned into a confidence coach. So now I work with leaders and individuals who are stuck, who have that eyes of the rage, like I'm just being treated differently. I don't know where I want to go. I'm struggling with my confidence has been knocked, or have given up because they feel that they are not worthy of any success because they've never been given that support. So I now coach people in their careers and also individually on their confidence and self-esteem and self-worth, how they can manage that inner critic, how they can light that fire that has been dimmed, take up that space and feel confident to be who they need to be without having to mask or hide themselves in any way. And following that post I did on Saturday, we started the Asian Communications Network to bring a psychological safe space to Asian professionals who work in marketing, comms, PR and media and journalism so they can talk to people like them who get it, like what it's like to be a marginalized voice in an industry where you're asking to be, where you're communicating about other people's stories and you don't see many people like you in that space. And that's led to something great. And as we said before we press record, you know, when something terrible happens, you have to look for the good. And it always has to be hope over fear. And that's the way I try to lead my life. You know, find the hope over fear, because fear will stifle everything and progression.
Yeah, what an absolute lovely way to kind of come towards the end of the podcast is, you're absolutely right, through all of that hate, we, there is no other word for it. It is to look for the positive, look for the goodness, and to build on that.
Yeah.
Because that will always overcome the hate.
Yeah.
So how can people find you, Advita?
Well, I'm also a doom scroller, Claire. So you often find me on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is my main platform. I share something on there every day about culture, confidence, you know, communication. I'm also on Instagram, so you can find me on Instagram either under Comms Rebel or under Advita P, which is my handle on there. And my DMs are always open as well. So if anyone ever wants to kind of share their story or they're looking for advice or whatever, then, you know, I'm here to help and support. And I think if we all did a little bit of that to everyone that we meet, then imagine the difference that we can make in our lives.
Absolutely. Oh, that's those starfishes. If we only help one starfish.
Yeah.
I will put all of the links for you in the podcast description so people can get hold of you. But thank you so very, very much for coming and joining us today and for being so willing to share your story of how you have come such awful behaviour. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you again for the invitation.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy listening to the episode and learn some tips on how to manage your emotions in a healthy way. If you've been affected by anything in the podcast, or if you want to share your feedback or questions, please email claire@angermanagementcoach.co.uk. Thank you for listening. And do remember, you have the power to calm your emotions and communicate effectively.